That again was defeated by Catherine Byers, but now that he has the votes, and if he proposed something now, he could get something passed. Of course, he's doing absolutely nothing about it. On the line with us is former chair of the Homeless Issues, or chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force member, Linda LeMaster, who has some comments. I don't know if you're going to be commenting about the magnet effect or other things. Linda, how are you doing?
Well, I'll give you a magnet effect comment, but I mainly want to talk about getting a housing authority subsidy.
Go ahead.
Because I was listening to the woman whose story you played a few minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
You know, Sugar, also, in spite of his lip service that makes it sound like he's concerned about what happens to homeless people, he wasn't willing to get behind having people have been displaced or evicted as a protected class, and that concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to say about the housing is, because the woman that you interviewed would definitely qualify, and a lot of people probably would, even if they get Medi-Cal and that's the only way they're linked to the so-called safety net system.
Mm-hmm.
If they're disabled and they're getting any kind of help from the service providers locally, including the county, they don't have to be on a waiting list. They can get the, what they call it, a voucher. They can get the voucher, the certificate that says they're eligible for a housing authority subsidy immediately. It's apparently only disabled people whose disabilities are recognized by the system, and you have to be referred by, like, Medi-Cal or Homeless Services Center. I think there's six agencies. But it's easy, and the hard thing is finding a landlord who will take it these days, because the housing costs have gone up faster than the housing authority has adjusted for.
Now, Linda, there are... I'm sorry, keep going.
I'm almost done. It's just important that, you know, the people that need it don't know about it, you know. These nonprofits aren't really doing a good job at making any contact with people that are already homeless and displaced because of things like disabilities. So, trying to compensate for that a little through Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
I was looking at the city council letter folder down at the city council offices, which is open to the public 8 to 5, in case people want to see it. You can't come in between 12 and 1, but... And you have to ask for it, but they'll direct you to it eventually if you ask long enough. There's a letter from you expressing some concerns about this 3-day restriction on yards and, I guess, business parking lots. And I guess it, you know, they're claiming it applies to religious parking lots too, and that they're going to, quote, remove that restriction. What exactly did you say to the council in your letter?
Well, I can't remember the letter. It was a little long, but I remember a few points that are worth sharing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing I felt most angry about is that, as historically typical, the council is so pressured or worried or, I don't know, out to lunch or childish about trying to banish people that appear to be homeless that they're not thinking about the rest of the community. This is a tourist town. Tourism is its bread and butter, you know. The strawberries are from Watsonville. There's no other real significant income here. And so they're not even thinking about what they're doing. They're just trying to banish people. And, you know, that on top of the selective enforcement that will follow these kinds of laws and follow the ones that already exist makes it really stupid lawmaking. I think the ordinance is going to be stupid if it passes.
Well, you know, I was, and I think you were there for some of the debate in February and March of 1999.
I sat through the whole stupid meeting on February 99 to the very end.
Now, do you recall, and I don't, and I've talked about this before, and I've actually looked at the tapes, or listened to the tapes, and looked at the videotape. Do you recall any discussion whatsoever of a 3-day limit on business lots or backyards, side yards?
No, I clearly recall how off the wall it was when Councilmember Fitzmaurice brought in the idea of 3 days, and very clearly it was pertaining to how long a guest could sleep or park in a vehicle in somebody's personal private yard.
You mean anybody in a person's driveway is what you mean?
In the driveway.
At least that's what I heard.
That was so off the wall. I mean, the idea of attributing a 3-day limit as if it existed to all the other few, you know, like there are 3 different kind of places where they said, all right, people can park there. As if it were the city's any business whether people park to sleep in a church lot. But they made it their business.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't intended to apply to anything except the residential driveway situation. And that's absurd. That's just so off the wall. The rationale that the council member said was, oh, well, the cops have to warn people for 3 days before they can impound the car. So why not make a 3-day limit on people who are living in their vehicles?
Now, you were chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which was established after the failure of any meaningful change during these two council meetings in 1999. Instead, they had this task force, which was supposed to, according to Christopher Crone, the main charge of the task force, which he discussed in February and March, was to find places for people to sleep, which, of course, the task force never did or never really tried to do with any great
intensity. If they ever had their whole committee there for a whole meeting at the same time without having to do child care, maybe they'd have got a little more done.
You know, but I think that I was impressed that, some of the activists, I myself among them, fell down in not bringing to the Homeless Issues Task Force the words of Crone, which said, this is your task, charge, go do it, and might have been able to pressure the task force to do something, although we did attempt to pressure them to do numerous things, and you did do, some things your task force did do. But in the course of your chair on the task force, do you recall there being an understanding that there was anything other than no time limit on church parking lots, no time limit on business parking lots, no time limit on backyards, and a 3-day limit on driveways?
We had me and Keith Sugar, who was mayor then, and the police chief, Steve Belcher, had talks about this explicitly. There wasn't such a thing. Anybody who's saying there was is just coming off the top of their head. They don't know what they're talking
about. That's John Barisoni, Ed Porter, Scott Kennedy, Mark Premack.
Well, I don't know. Ed Porter seemed to have some intelligent questions. I know you've been very critical.
Yep.
And David Silva, too, is calling him a traitor, in effect. But I have more hope that Ed Porter will try to get to the bottom of something than any of the other people sitting right now.
Well, I hope you're right.
Well, it's not a lot of hope.
Well, I hope tomorrow.
It's the only hope there is.
Well, I know that I've encouraged you and other members of the Homeless Issues Task Force, or the former Homeless Issues Task Force. I guess Sherry Connerill has also written a letter. I know Thomas Levitt is now, as it was said, he was going to try to call Catherine Byers, Fitzmaurice, Sugar, to try to at least get them to come get public on what their understanding and what they remember from the debate. But, you know, we don't even have to rely on their memory of the debate, because the debate is pretty clear. I'd have to play you an hour and a half of it for you to hear it, but there is, I mean, it was longer than that. It went from...
It was over like after 1 a.m.
Went from 7 o'clock to about 1:45 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the evening to 1:45 in the morning on the first session. On the second session, I think it was 2.5 hours in March. But the actual portion that concerns the backyards and side yards, and there was nothing about backyards and side yards, actually. There's only something about driveways and business parking lots, and I'm going to play some of that soon, but I hope that you are able to not only call council members privately and find out what's going on, but also to write a second letter, perhaps a shorter one, and come to City Council and speak up on this issue on Tuesday.
I hope I'll be able to speak up, too, but I'm going to send them a message in case I can't, because my health is unstable.
I hear you.
But I'm also going to try to expose this beyond the county line here, because I think maybe they'll wake up if they realize the world is watching them. It's a long shot, but it's...
Well, of course, what we need to do is, as Kenita say, is set up a tent city outside City Hall and just start sleeping in, saying if you're going to start changing the laws to this extent, there's really, you know, there's nothing we can do other than engage in some kind of immediate massive civil disobedience. But, again, it's much easier to issue the call for this and to get it to happen.
I want to support the way the woman who you played the tape about before put it. You know, where are the people who have been homeless and aren't? Because when you're homeless, there's a lot of pressure, you know. I know people have been physically ran out of town by the police because they wanted them shut up, and worse. And it's hard to keep up with any kind of tickets you get when you're homeless. You're not in a position to risk your bedding or your pup tent every time it needs to be done. We really need people in this town who understand what has happened, whether they've been through it or not, to stand up for the people that are being chewed up and spit out by society.
Yay. Well, thank you, Linda. I've been talking to Linda LeMaster, and is there anything more you want to add?
No, it can wait.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's still Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Jump on the phone and call 427-3772, 427-3772, if you want to be in the studio. And here's somebody who's doing just that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, yeah. Puppet Master coming through.
Well, what's happening, big guy?
Hey.
So you are the man who was carrying that big, crazy-looking puppet yesterday in the rally downtown?
I just wanted to, you know, bring the heat. I really like the radio today. This is a really good show. I am the guy who was carrying that puppet. There's a nice photo of it on the internet, by the way, at the Santa Cruz Indie Media site, if anybody's wondering.
Uh-huh.
SantaCruz.IndieMedia.org. is the place everybody can get. There's up-to-date news. You know, he's just doing it every day, so, yeah.
There was the man with the camera following that protest around. I think
23,
that was,
yeah, 23 Fresh. He was bad. I really like him. He's got it going on. So, everybody, want to say what's up to the rest of the Progressive Federation? Yeah.
That's tonight at the 7
yeah,
o'clock,
exactly.
I guess, at the
what's
Veterans
up,
Hall.
Everybody? Mm-hmm. Let's meet tonight. Let's get together, mobilize. This is, we're making history now, so. Yeah, there's also a lot of stuff going on online. We're all just sort of getting together, anybody who's interested. There's a lot of different groups happening, including, like, you know, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom groups.
Ew.
On the internet. Look out.
Well, so, cool.
Yeah, anyway, I just wanted to call and say hello. Last night, the Huff Band performed at the open mic, you know. It was a really serious show, but I'm kind of feeling not really serious because the Huff Band played last night.
We actually have one of the Huffsters in the studio.
Ow!
Who is there. We may get a report from him on the Anarchist Coffee House, where the sleeping band, or band, made its first...
debut!
Its debut, man.
The sleeping band.
Yes,
so.
Man.
We are for hire.
Hey, maybe we can have that coming up shortly, as soon as I can position this man at the other mic.
Oh, I'm saying. Let's do this.
Yeah. So, anything else you want to add?
No, that's it. I just want to keep the phone lines open. This has just been good radio all the way through. And
okay.
Here we go. I'll contact you later. You're going to be doing some tabling today?
I will be doing some tabling down in front of Yuppie Planter probably around 2.
Oh. Really cool. All right. We'll keep it locked and just rock on.
See you then.
All right.
Bye-bye. So, actually, why don't we find out what did happen at that crazy anarchist coffee house, and what is this so-called sleeping band, which I've heard about, something like a Band-Aid and a sleeping band, but a sleeping band? What's this about there, Huffster?
I don't know, Robert. I still got a hangover, and I'm a little sleep-deprived.
There you go. It sounds like Jeff the Fiddler to me, man.
Yeah, but in a good way, Robert.
Oh, oops. I'm not going to comment on this, but so you were slinging out the sounds last night, were you?
Yeah, man, and I was listening to some really, really dynamite sounds.
Are you able to be sufficiently coherent about this to make a decent radio?
Yeah, man, I just had, like, some really strong coffee.
Oh, okay, man. Well, you have 30 seconds to make your case before we move on to the next taped segment.
One of the best things that happened last night as I finally got the lyrics to I Love the Cops by my friend Desert Rat.
Let's see. I think we have a phone call coming in. The phoner's stopped phoning.
Yeah, go for it, Robert. Huh?
You might phone in again in a moment.
Call back.
So while we're waiting for that call, we will we'll look for the upcoming... Whoop, here it is again. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Make us look bad, man. We're not a bunch of drunkards.
Well,
we're serious.
Yeah, uh-huh.
We're
going to
bring up some civil rights issues with this band. I mean, this is like the real deal. You know, we should form like benefits and like get everybody
inalienable human right.
We got songwriting circles, you know.
Mm-hmm. You have an inalienable human right to concern.
Let's get our message across.
Dig it.
Let's hold a concert in front of city council.
We will continue.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, one of our ideas is we're going to get ourselves a little collection of homemade instruments such as... homeless people may improvise.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'll try to catch you when you have more voice and more energy. That coffee can sometimes do it to you. So let's hear some more from On the Streets, and then we'll go back to the shitty council. You can always call in throughout this process, 427-3772. Plus, we'll be hearing from Michael Schmidt soon, I think, the supervisorial candidate. All right, it's about 20 to 1, and we're in front of New Leaf Market, and we're talking with...
William Wesley Crow.
And, Crow, you, of course, have been having... You occasionally get the flat fist of the law in your da-doo-dah, but you recently, actually, you've got a subpoena from the district attorney because you yourself were the victim of a hate crime.
Yes, I was.
And what happened there?
Last month, I was coming down Pacific Ave. I was over here by... the catalyst, you know, I was working on my bike. So this guy walked up, you know, he got out of his truck and he walked up on me. He said, "Hey, nigga, what time is it?" I said, "What the hell are you talking about?" He said, "You heard me, nigga." He said, "We should take you to the hill and kill you and bury you, you fucking nigga, you know?" And so he got up in my face and I pushed him off me. So some people came out the catalyst and across the street. They said, "What the fuck's going on, you know?" I said, "I don't know what's going on with dudes, you know?" So they grabbed him and called the police.
And this was an individual alone came up and said this?
Yeah, it was two others with him, but he was the one that was doing all the vocal shit.
Now, how was the man dressed and what did he look like?
He had like a big old swastika tattooed on his chest. He had his hair shaved down real low. And about five, four, five, six.
How old?
I'd say about in his late 30s. Or
Caucasian?
Yeah, he was Caucasian. He was white. He was a wood.
So, what happened then?
Then after he started getting off, voices calling me nigga and all this, so people restrained him, was holding it. They said, man, you don't know Crow. Crow don't bother nobody. He said, why are you fucking with him, you know? He's a nigga. He needs to be dead. He needs to be buried in the hills.
He said those words.
That's what he said. So when the police came, they interviewed the people around him, and they quoted everything that he said. And so they arrested him and took him to jail.
And what time of day was this?
This was around about this time right here, about between 12 and 2.
And how long you lived in Santa Cruz, Crew?
I've been there since 1979.
Now, this is pretty overt racist Klan stuff, but how do you find the average Santa Cruz? Do you think there's much racism here in town?
Hell no. Just buttheads that just come here that don't even know nothing about it. This is a healing place. Some fools just come here just to be fools.
What about your average person? Do you think the average people here are racist or not?
Not overtly. Some of them are like subject to racism because of, like, not racism, being prejudiced because of the mode of production that articulate how they feel about people and shit. Like, something might happen in Los Angeles with some black people and they feel like they generalize it, that all black people are that way, you know?
Right.
So, overall, no, it's a cool place.
Well, I know you got hassled once for a relationship with a white woman, right?
Yeah.
That was relatively recently, a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
So that happened because of a police department activity, right?
Yeah, they just kept hassling. Every time they would see me and her together, they would stop the car for, like, all kind of reasons. Like, one time they stopped the car because the blinker was on and she didn't make the turn at the right time. So that gave them reason to have me lay on the ground while they frisked me and asked her was I holding her captives or some shit, you know?
And were you?
Hell no. Come on, my homegirl.
Just kidding.
My homegirl.
Did you used to live at St. George?
No.
No, it wasn't you.
So, they let me go, they let us go, but they told us they're going to be watching us. And we asked them why. They said because we have to, because it's our job. So
make sure that you darker folks don't get out of line.
Yeah, make sure we don't interbreed and shit.
Yeah, you want to make sure that the race retains its purity.
Yeah, we don't want to contaminate nobody. But see, the bottom line is I ain't asked to come to this planet. God sent me here. I didn't ask to come here. So I'm here now and I got to make the best of it. I got to stay above ground at all times.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, bring my bike back.
Anything you want to add there, Carl?
Yeah, I wish that God would just move the spirit of racism, prejudice, sexism off people's hearts, man. And let them all realize we one family, one God. Because on Judgment Day, we're going to stand before the throne.
Now, you are the individual who was arrested on this charge was a man named, do you remember his name, Stuart?
Stuart Wayne. Wayne Stewart. I don't even know
it. And you're being subpoenaed to testify at his trial on the 4th of March?
Yeah, the 4th of March.
What time? You know what that is?
At 9 a.m.
And you know what court?
Department 1.
That sounds like Irwin Joseph's court. Do you know what he's charged with?
If the number's on it, hate crime.
Right. Okay. No, that's good. That should cover it. Thank you very much. Go. Anything else you want to say?
Pray for me.
All right. Well, we have a well-surveilled hippie planter here. Officers are viewing the scene. It's about 10 to 1, actually just one officer. Looking over the property, I think he may be swooping down on abandoned property soon. It's No, he's taking off. That's good.
Where will we go from here?
Just to walk and talk?
No, if they close this up.
We're talking with Carol, who's a real old-time Santa Cruzans. Carol, I first met you, in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
You were with Rick at that time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't remind me.
Hey, reminding you of your old days.
But I am old.
Well, yeah.
Hey!
Carol. Yes. All the old-timers are getting together here.
Yeah. They took the trash can away.
Which trash can?
I still think they're going to throw that charge out on.
Now we got to throw it off.
Petty vandalism here. It was last week or something. I punted one of his chairs back under the table because it was sitting in the middle of the walkway. He's up in my face going...
This guy?
Alibaba. He's up in my face going, that's not real cool. If you ever do that again, I'm going to kick the shit out of you. And I go, whoa, man.
I think
back.
We need
You're
to call him Taliban.
He is part of the Taliban.
American youth, man.
He's the American Taliban right there.
That's the Taliban.
I like to think of it more as the Bushy Bond.
Then I went up to one of the downtown hosts, and I said, hey, man, some guy was just waggling his finger in my face, straight and beat the shit out of me. He goes, okay, we can check this out. He gets a cop, and we go down here, and he goes, who was it? And I pointed Alibaba, right? And the cop says, you wait here for a minute. And he goes over and starts talking to him, and Alibaba starts showing him this chair. So I walk over to look. This little hairline crack.
It might have been there forever.
It was. When he pressed it down, you could see dirt in there, just like a car wreck, the way they look for dirt, right, in the, you know, thing and things like that. And I said, hey, man, I didn't do that. But the cop insisted on giving me a ticket for petty vandalism with a court date, never took me up on the assault or disorderly conduct thing on Alibaba at all. He just made like it didn't exist. And he took a picture of the chair, and I'm sure the DA is going to take one look at that picture and say, I'm not prosecuting this, but the statistic will remain. Another petty vandalism arrest on the mall. There ought to be a way to have a suit, like a class action suit, to prevent them from using their statistics for anything, because they're not valid.
Use the law to fight them, though, because the law works for them.
I know that. The law protects...
I'm just trying to go through the courts. The fucking courts are paid off by these guys.
The law protects private property, kicks shit out of people that don't have any.
The police officer took the complaint.
The key word here is property. A human. You should have the rights over the fucking property.
No doubt. What was the question, Robert?
The police officer took the complaint.
I don't have the paperwork with me. I can't tell you. I don't know his name. Yeah, of course they are.
They are fucking
eyeballs. That guy right there. I'm going to point at him for a while and make him nervous. That little creep, yeah.
Those guys right here.
I've watched him feed these cops without them paying for it, too. The essence of corruption, and you're looking at it.
There you have it. It's always a pleasant time in beautiful Santa Cruz, particularly when the police and the merchants are trying to remove public spaces here in front of New Leaf Market.
For poor people.
From
poor people, you know, yeah.
They don't have anything. They don't have anything. Anything else to do.
There's all kind of shit going on here. Yeah, we know that. There's all kind of shit going on here.
You think I should go ask him where I can get medical marijuana?
Yeah, sure.
The cop, you think he'll tell me?
That'd be interesting. I'd be curious to know what he has to say. He certainly, certainly is a legitimate request. Medical marijuana is legal under 215, you know. Who knows what he'll say. He let me, you know. And that was life at Hippie Planter right before it became Yuppie Planter. Actually, the 20th, today is the 24th, about, might have even been on the day that the green fence was put in. Hard to tell. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, here in beautiful Santa Cruz. And we're now going to try to get through to supervisorial candidate Michael Schmidt and try to get a little something from him. He's only gotten one endorsement so far from the Shutter Police Officers Association of Santa Cruz, which doesn't sound good, but ironies abound in this campaign. Looks like, however, we're reaching a message machine, so we're going to have to wait on that. What we're going to do instead now is turn to the debate on the modifications of the camping ordinance in 1999 that gave us the ordinance we have today. And the particular section that is in controversy, at least for me, and has taken up an inordinate amount of my time when I should have been organizing a tent city, is section 6.36.020, which is camping permitted. And what it reads now, it reads as follows, that it has four sections, A, B, C, and D. It says, camping may be permitted in the city of Santa Cruz only under the following circumstances. And before I'll read that, I'll take this call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert Mike here.
Oh, ho, you did call in. We just got your answering machine.
Well, I was just in a space where I couldn't pick up a good signal.
A likely story.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you. We're talking, of course, to Michael Schmidt, a third district supervisorial candidate, former CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, and an activist for human rights causes. Hey, Mike. What's happening out there?
Oh, just hit another 200 doors this morning and getting ready to step in and have a little lunch.
Well, that might be good. Before you do, however, you better feed us some thought, give us some food for intellectual munchies here.
What have you been finding, and anything of note among the populace whose door you've been knocking on? I know that we found that Premack is spending some huge amount of money in the last month, outspending Wormhout 2-1. Wormhout still exceeds Premack, I guess, in total spending, whereas you are doing a very low budget campaign, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to do a grassroots campaign of walking and knocking. On Friday, I hit my 10,000th door, and interesting today. You may know the Sentinel endorsed Mr. Premack.
No surprise.
But I had a couple people when I knocked on the doors today say, well, if the Sentinel didn't endorse you, you're probably the best candidate, so you got my vote. Kind of makes you feel good. And I also ran into a couple hard and fast Marty supporters, mostly women, I'm finding. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. You know, that's it's the political process. We'll just have to see what happens on the 5th.
Mm-hmm. Did you? I know that we spoke last night. You're trying to update your website on the homelessness issue, which of course is one of my primary concerns. I noticed it hasn't appeared yet. Is that likely to appear soon? Or
we sent it over to the webmaster this morning, and I would assume that it'll be up today or tomorrow at the latest.
And your website again is
www.voteschmidt.com.
VoteSchmidt.com. And I guess the changes you made, you were very explicit in stating, among other things, that you favored ending the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance in the city.
100% agree with that.
Hey. If you continue to find that when you explain this to people, you generally get support?
Generally, I get support. Now, you've got people that, you know, are so negative and so racist and bigoted that they're not going to, you know, good reason and money wouldn't make any sense to these people. But for the most part, the overwhelming majority, when we have a chance to have an honest discussion, they agree. They say, well, I didn't realize that you could get a ticket and be violated and have to spend money and mm-hmm. go to court. That's not the way we ought to be doing it. And I said, especially since, you know, that ticket could probably pay for a voucher to provide somebody a shelter for the evening anyway at one of our underutilized hotels in the off season for certain. But generally speaking, you're right. When I have a chance to dialogue with people face to face, and they hear where I'm coming from on this issue, 99% of the time they say, I hear where you're coming from and I agree with you.
Is this an election that most people are interested in, this one coming up on March 5th? I mean, is it relatively low on the voters' priorities?
Yeah, I think it's 7th, I think. You know, I've talked to over 3,600 today. I think that make me 3,630 people, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do is to keep a tally of we update each week on what people have said is an issue for them or an issue of importance to them. And homelessness ranks about 7th, I believe. On
board with it.
You know, I don't know. I know the pundits say that we're ahead there.
You're still here. Go ahead.
Okay, the pundits say we're going to have a very low turnout. And that may very well be true, but I think that the utility tax and measure C and D on the ballot, there may be more turnout than they expect.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I'm getting very surprised and somewhat saddened that a lot of the, especially people who own property here, telling me they're going to vote no on C and D. And the utility tax is like the 11th of my top 10 on things that people have mentioned, because most of the people in the city, you know, it's not going to affect them one way or the other. They're still going to pay the utility taxes. The city has one. But I think we just have to wait and see. You know, I know that a lot of groups are trying to make a good effort to get their folks out to vote. I know we are. So let's see what happens. We'll probably have a lower than normal voter turnout simply because this is an off-year election. And March is kind of weird for people. I think most people are thinking that we're thinking June is the time when we normally have these elections, and March is kind of a weird time for a lot of folks.
Well, I know also I've heard that the Downtown Association may have been put the kibosh on you because at one time you were responsible for changing quite a number of minds in the residential neighborhood associations around safe places to sleep, right?
Well, I don't know if it specifically was the Downtown Association. I did have a gentleman yesterday when I was meeting with my team walk up and show me a fax that he had received from one of the downtown businesses, which I think was probably one of the dot-com businesses, which I assume, since Mark Premack has some of his folks in that camp, it could have been Mark's group, but I don't know, indicating that this business owner and Pete Everly from the Downtown Association were wholeheartedly endorsing Mark Premack. Because if I was elected, I would let homeless people loiter and live downtown, and that I had supported creating safe sleeping zones in the downtown area, which is not accurate, but nevertheless. And you know, this is the way it goes in politics. You have to take your lumps with your bumps, and this is where they're coming from. I know that Pete, we did check and discovered that Pete did sign Mark's nomination petition, so maybe there's something to it. But Pete's never said anything to me, and I've seen him a number of times since in just the last few weeks. So what's going on?
Well, here's a more difficult question for you, Mike. Why should low-income people vote for you when we're told by Marty Wormhout and those who support, let's say, the maintenance of the utility tax of the county, cutting off the utility tax will result in the cutback of social services?
Well, I think their tactic these folks are using, $10 million is certainly a heck of a lot of money. It ran for 3.52% of the county's general fund. They could select to take the hits anywhere they want, and I have kind of a values-driven budgeting process, which would recommend that the last things you cut are services to people and services for public safety, and then the first things you'd cut is the enormous bureaucracy and fat you have at the county building, which represent about $68 million of that general fund budget. And Marty, oddly enough, in the Community Connections Forum, said that the supervisors never called for cutting services to the poor and so forth. So I'm kind of confused where she's coming from, especially since there was no on L literature right on the wall there, which talked about 10,000 hours of child care and 10,000 hours of meals and so forth that would be cut if these things happened. But I think if you want to see fiscal accountability, you want to have somebody who's going to be fighting for all people, not just for the select few, then I would think that a vote for me is probably a better thing than voting for Marty or Mark, because they kind of represent the status quo and the select and the elite.
Well, what about, what do you think is likely to happen? Assuming the utility, let's suppose the utility tax is defeated and it's getting cut. If you aren't on the council, what do you think will be cut? First of all, how much do they have to cut?
Well, I think probably that they will go through with what Susan Mariello has recommended,
which is
and then blame everybody else but themselves, which is some of the services that do go to the poor and to the disadvantage of our community.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the vindictive politics that these people are noted for. Unfortunately.
So even if you got elected and this utility tax was cut, wouldn't you be in a position where even if you favored not cutting those social services, you would still be faced with possibly four hostile supervisors who would take Mariella's recommendation and then cut the services?
Well, I tell you what, I'd fight like the Dickens and I'd call these people what they are. If they continue to move that way, I'd ask for a complete independent audit of county government. I think we kind of got Enron 2 here, and before we ever do this, as we found that the county of Santa Cruz is low on the totem pole of receiving federal funds and grants, our share of those monies, of five counties we looked at in similar in population and similar unincorporated areas. I mean, here's little Butte County, gets almost $200,000 more a year back from fed and state monies that Santa Cruz County somehow doesn't receive. So I think that we need to be a little bit better fiscal managers, and I'd certainly fight for that. And I think what I'd do is go to folks like you in the media and say, hey, here's what I'm learning as an insider as to what these folks are doing and what they could be doing, and hopefully embarrass them into realizing this is not the way to do and to treat people in this community.
Now, if you don't win this race, this will be a two-person runoff if nobody wins a majority.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't win this race, are you still going to be interested in raising your voice at supervisors' chambers, or, candidly speaking, I know that you've suffered some personal losses in your family situation. Are you going to be needing to take a breather from all this? Are you, in other words, you're going to be around when this debate hits if L, is passed, if the utility tax is cut back, and then we're faced with a bunch of supervisors who've decided they're going to slash social services? Will you be interested in leading this charge even if you're not on the board?
Most definitely.
Well, you're a man who's kept his word in the past there, Mike, and I'm going to bring it up again in a month if and when that happens.
Okay, let's see what happens, because now this is wrong. They know it. It's easier for them to take the low road than to take the high road. It's easier for them to, as Fred Keeley said, use the Bob the Monkey approach, where you just say, okay, as Susan Mariello has done, okay, Human Services Division, you make up 24% of the budget, you deserve 24% of the loss. Public Service, you make up 24% of the budget, you're going to have to make up 24% of the loss. no fiscal accountability on these people's part at all. And, you know, we found that we do have the unprecedented salaries. The Board of Supervisors have given the 172 employees at the county building almost $4 million in salary increases that will happen in February of next year. So they obviously know where the money's buried, and I think they could come up with that. Some of these people, I mean, Susan Mariello getting a $43,000 increase in 1 year, even the lowest in their what they call the deputy customer service person, customer service is an oxymoron with those folks, is getting a $12,000 increase in 1 year. So they've got the money. They know how they could make it happen without cutting services to the poor, without impacting public safety. But they choose to scare the public because, you know, they like that money. And these are just tax and spend liberals. And unfortunately, it's easier to take the high road than it is to really sit down and say, okay, how can we strategically make this happen? Because, you know, if you've got that money, you don't want to lose it.
Well, let me huddle with you briefly and ask you this. If you look at Susan Mariello's budget, if L is passed, how much money will be lost from social services if they follow her recommendations, and let's say in the first year?
Probably around $6 to $7 million.
And do you have an alternate budget that would take that money from other sources? And where would
yes.
it come from exactly?
Well, it'd come from county operations. We have 108 planners at the county planning department, and Santa Clara, the city of Santa Clara, which deals with the same type of bureaucracies and governmental regulations, is almost as built out, same as Santa Cruz County, has a dozen planners. So, you know, we could cut probably 96 employees out of the county budget would save $10 million, and that's not even counting benefits and taxes.
Wow.
That's just straight salaries. So they, you know, they can make the cut by nutrition. They can make the cuts by a hiring freeze. They can make the cuts by reorganizing the planning department. You know, there's a variety of ways it could be done, but they just choose to take the low road and make it easy on themselves, so they don't have to think. And that's why Fred Keeley called them the Bob the Monkey approach.
Well, you now have 2 minutes to say anything else you want to say about issues we haven't raised that you think people who are listening to this station should know about. Remember, you're talking to people who are sympathetic with Wormhout on numerous issues that don't involve homeless civil rights, because she's utterly horrible on that issue, but let's say on social services. And you've given, I think, some, to me, good answers on where you'd cut the budget. What would you do to increase, improve, or refine social services for those who need them here in the
county?
Well,
I think that I was on the What Works Committee of United Way, where we're looking at best practices. We have an enormous amount of nonprofits in this community who are in business to be nonprofits and try to deliver services consistent to their mission, but aren't necessarily doing the job. I think we can look at consolidation, some refinements, some cooperation, some partnerships that will help to, one, provide better services for people who really need those services, and at the same time, improve the efficiency in the delivery of that. I mean, I'm a productivity management consultant by trade since I've retired from B of A, and, you know, looking at how we can improve productivity is critical. And as we learned with the What Works Committee, there are a number of best practices out there for people who are spending a lot less money, getting a lot bigger bang for their buck than some other organizations which, you know, raise. I mean, you got to ask yourself, these folks raise $70,000, nonprofit organizations, to fight Measure L. That $70,000 could have gone into to their budgets to help improve their capabilities to deliver services, but now it's going into some you know, sign maker's hand and some mail delivery service and some printer's hand. And this to me, that's not the way to go.
Fair enough.
Okay, big guy, keep up the good work.
Hey, you too, and keep those shoes shined.
Yeah, well, I'm up to go through my third pair here, I think, before next week.
Well, we'll talk to you again.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike. And that's candidate Michael Schmidt. Best of three, in my view, at the moment. That's not any organization's view. That's just my view. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're now going to tune into the February 1999 debate on the minor changes in the camping ordinance, specifically around the issue of the disputed amendments to the section I was reading to you before, which is called Camping Permitted. And the relevant section here is 6.36020D, Camping. What it had previously said in the prior ordinance was camping was permitted before the changes were made in the yard of a residence with the consent of the owner or occupant of the residence, where the camping is in the rear yard or in the area of the side yard or front yard that is separated from view from the street by a fence, hedge, or other obstruction. Semicolon. Note, no 3-day limit.
or two, inside of a licensed and registered motor vehicle in the parking lot on the site of a religious institution, with the written consent of such instruction or the driver or occupant of such vehicle is in possession of a valid driver's license, provided that no more than three vehicles shall be permitted at any one location. Again, no three-day limit. Now, what happened was there were two sections added in the course of this debate. There was a third section, which now reads, also permitted will be inside of a licensed and registered motor vehicle in the parking lot on the site of a business institution in a non-residential district with the written consent of both the business institution and property owner where the driver or occupant of such a vehicle is in possession of a valid driver's license, provided that no more than two vehicles shall be permitted in any one location. Notice, no three-day limit. And finally, four, the one area where the three-day limit was added, to the recollection of every activist I've talked to, inside a licensed and registered vehicle in a residential off-street driveway with the written consent of the owner and occupant of the resident where the driver or occupant of such a vehicle is in possession of a valid driver's license, provided no more than one vehicle shall be permitted in any one location. Now here comes the rub. The next section is a long section which is intended to modify all the past sections. And it said, camping shall not be permitted under this subsection where it is conducted in such a manner as to create noise, inadequate sanitation, or other matters offensive to persons of ordinary sensibility, nor where the camping is of such frequency, intensity, or duration as to constitute a use of land prohibited by any provision of Title 24 of this code, which is essentially the whole land use code, or where the camping activity would be prohibited under any provision of this code concerning the use of mobile homes, nor where any fee, charge, or other monetary consideration is collected for the privilege of camping or for any facilities or the use of any facilities related thereto, nor where the covenants or conditions and restrictions of a duly organized homeowners association would prohibit the activity in the residential area subject to the covenants, conditions, and restrictions. And a few of these provisions were added in the course of this 1999 debate. The last sentence, however, was added only after Fitzmaurice made this amendment and was intended, by all the discussion I've heard in reviewing the tapes and also by everybody else's recognition, except for the city attorney, some police officers, and the city council, this is the sentence, no particular location shall be used for camping under this subsection for more than 3 days during any one calendar month. That was intended to refer to 6.360.200(d)(4), which is one vehicle in a driveway. However, if the current resolution passes, it will now refer to all yards and all business parking lots, as well as all driveways, cutting back space from 30 days a month when people are willing to provide a private place for folks to go, as, for example, one person did for Camp Paradise when Camp Paradise had to move and gave them a number of days there, it's going to put people in a much more difficult situation who have no place on public property at all now. They will have even less place on private property. Let's hear what the actual debate was like. This is the evidence I'm presenting for you to consider, perhaps to contact City Council at it, 420-5020, in the remaining 15 minutes of the show.
Hearing no second, that dies for lack of a second. So, all right, let's go on. 636-020, camping permitted, and the suggested...
The mayor.
Down towards the bottom, which talks about in the parking lot of a business... let's do that one first before we go on to the private driveway. So let's just deal with little three.
Are we skipping the 6.36.100A1?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, thank you. Make a motion to add or without if you want to.
Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that we...
Right.
Can we just see these?
Yeah, and of course, jumped the gun here. We'll have to cue it up a bit to reach that section. In fact, the problem we're going to have here is I'm realizing we are running out of time. And the only thing that I can do is suggest that I have heard these tapes, that there is no reference whatsoever to 3 days other than in a driveway. And then I think there's one minor reference to a business parking lot in the second reading of this, which actually I think was probably... confusion on somebody's part, because generally there is an understanding that all this discussion stems from Tim Fitzmaurice's recommendation his resolution that, and as Linda LeMaster said earlier, a ridiculous one, that there should only be 3 days allowed for this kind of Good Samaritan effort. And I've never heard so much or such bigoted ranting in my life from people like Rotkin, who went on and on about how this is going to be abused by people who will charge money and establish ancillary units by having people park in their driveways for long periods of time. And, of course, I haven't heard one case come up. Of course, Rotkin would say that's because they put in the 3-day limit on driveways. And anyway, in any case, this whole issue is going to be coming up at City Council on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. And it's an important issue. It's important because of what it takes away from people. It's just it's sort of a sad thing. And I was hoping to be able to play more of it. Again, as I said, we're looking at, you know, again, rearranging the deck chairs on the sinking ship here rather than dealing with the real issue, which is, or even starting to deal with the real issue, which has to do with taking the steps that we heard Jack Tafari of Portland, Oregon, and Larry Templeton's group took here in Santa Cruz, and which are being taken by Jetta down in Santa Barbara's Isla Vista, and have been happening up in Seattle and also in other cities. So we need to take action here because there's going to be another